Chapter 4. Trevex Propane. The weather warmed with every turn of the aging Buick's wheels toward the southern climes, the confining trees and hills giving way to grand western vistas of sand and stone. While the sky brightened with each passing hour, Trace still waded through the devastation of Teresa's betrayal like a naive child wandering through a broken, dusty desert resembling the one sliding by his window. Something of the cold Missouri winter still lodged in his heart, a shard of ice the fire of dawn's rapture didn't quite melt. 6 months had passed, but for him the disastrous party had happened a day ago. The moments of intense morning bliss had blasted away every shadow, but could not completely exorcise the demon of such a fresh, clawing hurt. It hid in the recesses of his mind, ready to scramble back out when the light receded. Oddly, he could more easily forgive Teresa than he could himself, unable to shake the damning feeling that his inadequacies had driven her into the arms of another. He liked a night at home better than a night on the town. He bought clothes from Walmart. He couldn't think up clever replies until the next day. If only he could have been more attractive or exciting, perhaps no bullet would have ended his life. Then the dawn would have brought the mortal rapture of waking up next to the love of his life. In his head, he knew a second chance stretched before him, an opportunity to make something of himself. But his failure with Teresa always rose up to chop any hopeful visions off at the knees. According to Lear, as an ash angel, he could run forever, change his age and appearance, and feel no physical pain. But the heart, it seemed, remained as fragile as it was the night a car wreck had stopped it. "It will fade, Trace," Lear said consolingly, turning down the soundtrack to The Music Man, which had accompanied them for the last 60 miles. "Rapture is like a river. Give it enough time and it can erode even the most stubborn stone. Focus forward, my friend. We're about an hour from Phoenix now, so why don't we review a bit? What are the 6 divisions of the Ash Angel organization?" Trace appreciated the attempt to divert him from his painful ruminations. Lear had schooled him in Ash Angel basics during the trip, and Trace found his memory stickier than it had been in life. "The Archai is the leadership, the Skolas the researchers, the Michaels the fighters, the Gabriels the spies and undercover operatives, the Oculum the seers, and the Sanctus for spirituality, ritual, and outreach."
"Good. And which division is full of insufferable paper-pushing bureaucrats?"
"The Skolas. Your division, right? Can you quit the Ash Angel organization or get fired or something?" Lear chuckled.
"Yes, yes, you can. I've been close a couple of times."
"Fired or quitting?"
"Both.
Look, you need to really let this sink in. We might call ourselves angels, but we're just as pathetically human as we were before. Sure, I think it's a higher quality of person who earns the right to return as an Ash Angel, but those cursed individuals who don't appreciate show tunes before they died tend not to appreciate them after. People who are tactless and stupid are still tactless and stupid, even though their hearts might be in the right place. Just don't expect heavenly choirs and a hippie love-in when we get to Trevex."
Trace nodded, feeling a little better about his own misgivings, though he certainly wouldn't have minded if Ash Angelhood had included a freedom from self-doubt.
"Why a propane factory? Remember when I said we were being hunted?"
"Yes," Trace replied. "You were talking about glowing red and black smoke and ghosts hanging out of people."
"Right. Everything, you see, has its opposite. Just as there are ash angels, there are what we call dreads, evil people revivified. We don't like water, they don't like fire. So, desert, propane, potential gigantic explosions, got it. And Trevex doubles as a business front and a training facility. Lots of oblivious normal folk work there, and I think we're actually profitable as a company, one of many the Ash Angel organization owns."
Lear's phone beeped and he picked it up.
"Hello." "Yep, we'll be there in an hour. When does the bus arrive with the rest of them?"
"We should get there about the same time."
"Yes, I reported to Ramus that he was a blank after I awakened him. That's why she's there."
"Okay. Bye." Trace wondered who she was as Lear stashed the phone in one of his many pockets.
Sorry about that. Someone's getting impatient. Anyway, dreads are such shallow, selfish creatures that Ash Angels have always been able to crush and outmaneuver them. That all changed this summer.
What happened?
Around the time you died in June, there were 167 Ash Angels like you. Blanks with no aura. Most blanks, as you can imagine, are assigned to reconnaissance and undercover operations missions because evil creatures can't spot them easily. Well, from June 19th through July 14th, the Dreads killed 62 blanks and a handful of regular Ash Angels. 62. And most of those in a 3-day span. That might not mean much to you until you consider that in the last decade, only 2 blanks had been killed during a firefight. It's the most Ash Angels that have been killed in recorded history. It was awful. It just sent the whole organization into a frenzy. Nobody went home for a week.
While Trace had no frame of reference with which to fully appreciate Lear's feelings, the emotional chill in the man's voice froze Trace's spine. The Dread's plan was tactically simple. They're knocking out your eyes and ears, trying to blind you.
Lear raised his eyes in surprise. Well, you're smarter than you look.
Your assessment is correct. But the most disturbing part is that pulling off a mass killing of unconnected Ash Angels in many different places means we have a leak, and a bad one, somewhere. I'm not really part of all that in the Scholis, but it's office talk for sure.
Whew, makes me sick to think about it.
Time for more music. How about a little rock and roll or something? Trace suggested as offhandedly as he could. He toured Broadway a few too many times in the last 24 hours.
Lear threw him a sour look, and his voice took on a snotty tone.
Rock and roll? Really? That bastion of fine art and finer feelings? 33% of rock is I'm angry at the authority, the next 33 is jump in the sack with me, baby, and the last 33 is why'd you leave me, baby? The 1% left over is Rush. I wasted my teenage years at arena concerts full of drugged-up screaming maniacs that wouldn't know good music from constipated grunting. Then I saw the light, Trace, bright and clear, like a rising...
So no rock, then?
Absolutely not, my friend. I've got a nice collection of Disney tunes on my MP3 player to tide us over.
The Phoenix skyline slid into view while Lear sang a tonally flawless duet with Pocahontas's Just Around the River Bend. They took I-10 toward the city and then veered north, the traffic thinning as the gleaming buildings of the city and early morning rush hour faded behind them. As the beautiful tans and browns of the desert engulfed them, an industrial complex popped into view ahead of them in the midst of sparse green trees dotting the sterile landscape.
Is that it? He asked.
Yep, almost there, my boy.
Oh, and just so you know, in Ash Angel culture, I am considered your father since I performed the awakening ceremony.
Always wanted to have a white boy, and hit one with a car, so 2 birds with 1 stone.
And look, the cherub bus is right behind us.
Trace craned his neck to see a gray passenger bus with large front windows coming up behind them. Even at a distance, Trace could make out the white auras surrounding the passengers along the center aisle.
Wait, why am I not on the bus? Is it because I'm a blank or whatever?
Yes and no. To be honest, the Ash Angel organization wasn't even going to send someone out to awaken you, but like I said, I had a hunch. Won a few bets, too. Thanks to you, I don't have to do news scrubbing for a week now. So they weren't expecting you for the bus ride. But really, blanks are valuable, and given our recent misfortunes, Archon Ramus wanted you hand-delivered just to be safe.
Archon Ramus?
Archon is a title for a section leader. Archons work under Arcuses, who work under the Grand Arcus. Archon Ramus heads up training for the Scholis Division. Remember those paper-pushing bureaucrats I mentioned? Well, he's their king and sits upon a throne of reports and paperwork, frowning at the peasants. He hates me. He'll probably hate you, too. In fact, I think he hates everyone except... Well, best not to pass on idle gossip at this point.
And hate is really too strong a word. Call it chronically dissatisfied.
The car slowed as they approached Trevex Drive. Lear shoved his hand in several coat pockets before finding a clip-on badge and fastening it to his lapel. It said he was David Crane, Assistant Facilities Coordinator. After another foray into his shabby coat, Lear produced a guest badge and handed it to Trace. His Ash Angel father had purchased new clothes for him during one of their stops, since Lear's vehicular introduction to Ash Angel durability had graced the last set with rips and tire tracks. As they approached the guard shack, Lear silenced the Disney music for good. The young security guard on duty lacked the friendly aura of an Ash Angel, his emaciated, haunted face a stark contrast to health and vitality. Stringy dark hair hung down below his security guard's cap, and the rumpled iron-gray uniform did nothing to aid his sallow, uneven complexion. Small dark eyes regarded them with a dull, clock-puncher stare. "Badge," he said with all the enthusiasm of a funeral home. Lear stretched out the window and handed it to him, smiling in spite of the less-than-friendly greeting from the guardsman.
"Any ghosts today, Ed?"
"There's always ghosts," Ed replied, typing in some numbers. "Is your guest part of today's special tour?"
"Yep."
Ed returned the badge.
"Blank then, huh?"
"You got it," Lear confirmed as he waited for the gate to slide back.
"Well, he'll probably be dead soon like the others. Move along."
The chain-link gate slid back, and they sped forward into a city of pipes, valves, tanks, and cylinders.
"And I thought I was miserable," Trace commented.
"Is he a blank?"
Lear chuckled.
"No. If you ever think you've got it bad, visit Edward Grain. He's a mortal, but a special one we call an afflicted. He can see evil spirits, and they torment him, so have pity. Even Ash Angels can't see spirits until they possess a human. Those are the ghosts hanging out of people I mentioned. Edward can always see them. Just imagine. He has lived much of his life in terror. Working here provides him some relief."
Lear wound around the road until it exited the industrial section and crossed over into a business park to the south of the propane infrastructure. They parked by the first office building, a drab three-story brown brick affair with some age on it. Behind them, the bus pulled up. As the bus squealed and hissed to a stop, three Ash Angels dressed in business casual emerged from the building's glass doors to greet the new angels. Lear killed the engine on the Buick.
"Let's go, my friend. I'll make sure they know who you are before I leave."
Trace felt strangely self-conscious as he clambered out of the car. The glow from the collective aura of the new Ash Angels filled the bus with a divine light, the interior darkening as they flowed out. He felt like the one birthday candle that wouldn't light. It all reminded him of filing off the bus at boot camp. The new Ash Angels appeared as bewildered as he was.
"Is attempted vehicular homicide standard training procedure?" Trace asked.
Lear slapped him on the back.
"No, half those cherubs think they're still dreaming. The other half think they're in heaven. You're at, like, a PhD level thanks to my advanced instruction. You can thank me later. Here's a quick heads up. The graying, severe-looking guy in the middle is Archon Ramus, head of the training facility. To his left, the squat beefy dude with the square haircut is Arcus Mars, head of the entire Michaels division. The matronly lady is Athena. She works with Ramus and oversees all the scheduling and provisioning, and is a witch. Don't be fooled. You'll meet the leaders of the other groups and divisions later this week. The Michaels come early and pick out all the cherubs with a military background and take them off for their own version of the training. You're a blank, so you won't be going with them."
Archon Ramus raised his arms and hushed the crowd of confused Ash Angels.
"Welcome, everybody. We want to keep this as orderly as possible. I am Archon Ramus, Director of Training, and I and my staff will take good care of you. Many of you have not accepted who you are yet, and that's okay. We'll help you figure things out. Now, I need each of you to come forward and grab a form from my assistant. Her name is Athena. There are 103 questions for you to answer.
Please be complete and truthful. Take one form and head inside to the cafeteria to fill it out, then we'll get you processed.
Forms? Trace asked incredulously. Angels have to fill out forms?
Just what I thought too,
Lear said. Bureaucracy persists beyond the grave, I'm afraid.
Taxes don't, thankfully, unless you're on a deep cover-up.
Look, if you're training with the Ash Angel I think you're training with, it might be a little rough.
Trace smirked. Rougher than basic training in the Marines?
Maybe, Lear said. Promise me you'll stick with it. I'll be the first to say that a lot of the forms and rules and people make me crazy, but the Ash Angel organization can help you, Trace. Give it a fair shake.
I will. They waited until the rest of the group filed inside before approaching Archon Ramus. The director was checking something on his oversized phone and made them wait while he finished.
Looks like we have 42 new ones total, he said to Mars, standing nearby. At least 6 are military.
Finally, he turned to Lear, his expression and tone void of pleasure.
What do you need?
This is Trace, the blank, Lear announced.
I knew that. Get him a form and get him in there.
Let me have him, Ramus, Mars said. We haven't had a blank in the Michaels for nearly a decade. We could use...
Absolutely not, Ramus interrupted decisively. The blanks find them, you grind them. You know what happened 6 months ago. A blank behind a gun is a waste.
Mars backed down and went inside without a protest.
Well, Trace, Lear said, I've got to get over to the Scholis office. You take care. Remember, I'm your father. You need anything, you call. Whenever it is they let you have a phone. I'll be watching my back for that Buick.
You do that.
Just remember, Trace, rapture comes every morning. All you have to do is survive one day at a time.
Lear turned away, singing a cheerful song about sunny tomorrows as he headed back to the car. Trace stepped toward Athena, who smiled at him in a motherly way and handed him the questionnaire.
Pencils are inside, dear, she said, hand extended toward the door.
Trace pulled it open and went inside, finding a plain-looking lobby with brown tile floors, fake plants layered in dust, and an information kiosk with Trevex propane brochures and a map of the building. Near a sitting area, a scraggly Christmas tree stood with worn tinsel and sparsely placed lights, a testament that Trevex propane remembered the season, though not in style. A curvaceous, well-dressed Ash Angel woman stood behind an information desk arranging some papers. She glanced up, eyes narrowing for a moment.
Excuse me, she said. Can I help you?
I'm supposed to go somewhere and fill out this questionnaire, Trace explained, holding up the form as evidence.
She cocked her head.
You arrived on the bus just now?
Well, no, he continued. Lear brought me in.
The woman relaxed.
Oh, you're the blank.
So I've been told.
She laughed.
I'm so sorry. I thought we had a normal wander in here by mistake. Welcome. My tag says I am Janice Kilgore, but you can call me Lavender. The rest of your group went to the cafeteria, down the hall and to the right. Good luck. If you need anything, I'll be right here.
Trace thanked her and turned the corner. The Ash Angels certainly spared no effort in making the office seem ordinary and even out of date. A fluorescent bulb blinked and buzzed in a hallway lined with company slogans and motivational posters. A beat-up water fountain hummed as he walked by. Despite not feeling thirsty, he instinctively took a drink, the stream barely rising above the nozzle and forcing him to practically make out with it to get any water. The dingy white cinder block walls of the hallway terminated in the worn blue double doors of the cafeteria, which a youthful Ash Angel girl opened for him with a doubtful look. Trace knew what it meant.
Blank, he said, and she smiled and nodded.
Inside, the Ash Angels from the bus dutifully scribbled away on the questionnaire, a few regarding him as he entered, a questioning look on their faces. Another group of Ash Angels stood by the serving line of the cafeteria. Their confident, comfortable laughter amongst themselves indicated they weren't new.
A blonde woman without an aura stood a little apart from them, regarding the whole assembly and now him with a cold expression. From a box on the table, he grabbed a pencil and sat down next to a plump, nervous woman with short hair and big eyes. She appeared troubled, scanning the questionnaire as if it were written in a language she didn't understand. Trace glanced at the first few questions. Name, birth, death, parents' names, last place of residence. The first substantial question read, "Describe how you died in detail, including the date and how you were killed, if you know." Trace really had no desire to relive it, but he exhaled and set pencil to paper.
"I beg your pardon," the woman next to him said sheepishly in an English accent. "But may I put a question to you?"
"Here we go again." "I'm a blank," he explained preemptively. "I don't have an aura."
"I'm afraid that is not what I intended to ask," she returned.
"I'm sorry," Trace said. "It's just that people, well, never mind. What's the question?"
"Yes, well,"
she said, pushing her questionnaire in front of him.
"This question isn't clear to me. I can't quite understand what it means."
Trace glanced at it. "List any proficiencies you have with computers and mobile devices beyond normal usage. List any programming, hacking, networking, repair, or other skills that are relevant." "What is it you don't understand?" he asked.
"What's a computer?"
Trace was stunned. "Where are you from?"
"Albany, originally. When I married, I moved to my husband's plantation in Charleston."
Trace nodded, then flipped back a page. Death date: August 14th, 1853. She snatched the paper from him.
"I beg your pardon."
Trace regarded her with wonderment. "Sorry. They did tell you what year this is, right?"
"Believe me, sir, I've been nothing but a fountain of questions for the last 24 hours. What a loud, blinking mess the world has become. And no time for tea, apparently."
Athena and Ramus strode through the doors.
"Is there a Priscilla Mary Walters here?" Athena asked.
"Oh dear, I hope I'm not in any sort of trouble," the woman whispered to Trace, raising her hand.
Athena strode over, smile sympathetic.
"Mrs. Walters, I am so sorry," Athena apologized. "You have a bit of catching up to do before you can join the rest of the group. You're the oldest Ash Angel we've awakened in quite some time. Please come with me, dear. Just leave the questionnaire."
Priscilla left with Athena while Ramus crossed the room to chat with the severe-looking blonde in the corner who had crossed her arms beneath her breasts and was listening to whatever Ramus had to say with an apparent lack of interest. She glanced at Trace, and he began filling out his questionnaire in earnest. The questions were clearly aimed at assessing skills and aptitudes, perhaps for some sort of placement, and he filled them out tersely. They also wanted a list of friends and relatives and where they lived. Lear had already drilled into him the importance of avoiding familiar places and people, mainly for their peace of mind.
"When you are done," a returning Athena shouted at everyone, "please hand me your questionnaires and we will head down to processing and get you all into the system. After that, you will watch a training film to answer all those questions rattling around in your heads."
Processing. System. Training film. This really was like boot camp. It all felt wrong to Trace. He thought being an angel would entail something more religious and organic, but this felt like the first day on a job. What was next? Corporate policies and rules? A briefing on workplace etiquette? Sensitivity training? His distracted thoughts and late arrival won him last place in finishing up, and by the time he stood to go, Athena had already left. Ramus and the blonde waited by the door. The woman had a thin face with unsympathetic blue eyes, not unlike those of his unforgettable drill instructor at Paris Island. Her hair was pulled back from her face, adding to her serious demeanor. She wore expensive-looking black slacks and a silky purple button-down shirt. Ramus's face was just as serious, but more businesslike than disapproving. He, too, dressed sharply,
with perfectly pressed dark gray pants, white shirt, and red power tie. Trace found their gravity annoying. Shouldn't angels be a little more happy and sweet, like Lavender? So, what's next? Trace asked, thrusting the questionnaire toward Ramus. W4s and a tour of the break room? Neither cracked a smile. This is Cassandra, Ramus introduced. Before Trace could even open his mouth, Cassandra whipped the questionnaire out of his hand and started leafing through it. I sure hope you learn faster than you fill out questionnaires, she mocked. Your handwriting sucks. When's the Scholus going to start doing this electronically, Ramus? Ramus ignored her question. You won't be joining the rest for processing, Trace. We're keeping you out of the system. Did Lear tell you about the massacre? Yes. Good. We're purging a lot of Gabriel information out of the database as a security precaution. Anyway, since we don't require rest, training here happens around the clock. You'll do half your training during the day with the other new angels. The rest you'll do at night with Cassandra here. She's a blank like you, and has extensive field experience as a Gabriel. There's a lot you can learn from her, and you need to learn it fast. We need blanks back in the field as soon as possible. Ramus finished, and they waited until Cassandra had her fill of Trace's information. Once done, she sighed in apparent dissatisfaction and tossed the questionnaire in the garbage near the door. So you're a jarhead who can program and who was shot by a woman named Darcy. What did you do to deserve that? Ramus turned toward her. I've read his Scholus file, Cassandra, and it wasn't his fault. You need to show a little more sensitivity if you want to earn your quality trainer certification. Oh, right. I wouldn't want to screw that up. I mean, I've got the frame picked out and everything. Look, you bullied me into this, Ramus. I don't want to train cherubs. Besides, he's a Marine, and he likes it raw. Isn't that right, soldier? I'll see you at 12 in the lobby. That's A.M. Don't be late. I hate that. She pushed her way through the double doors and walked down the hall at a stiff pace. Ramus and Trace watched her through the rectangular glass window in the doors until she turned the corner and passed out of sight. Charming, Trace observed. Show her respect, Ramus cautioned him sternly. You don't, and she'll chew you up. And afterward, you'll have me to deal with. Understood? Trace felt like executing a mock salute, but settled for a nearly sincere, yes, sir, instead. She really is one of the best, Ramus said as he turned to go. Check your ego at the door and you might learn something. Take this seriously. We're in a war, Trace. And for the first time, we've lost a major battle. Ramus held Trace's eyes for a moment and then strode out. The door clanked shut, and Trace found himself alone in the cafeteria wondering what he had gotten himself into. Lear was right. The heavenly host, this certainly wasn't. Perhaps peace on earth and goodwill toward men would come later. Or he would bail. But for now, and for Lear's sake, he would just go with the flow, which meant finding the more accommodating Lavender and asking her for directions to wherever they were showing the training film.